If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
In the quiet hills of Greenbrier County, West Virginia, a ghostly tale of love, betrayal, and justice unfolded in the late 19th century. This is the story of the Greenbrier Ghost, where the dead spoke to reveal the truth. Welcome to another episode of All Things Mysterious, the podcast where the realms of true crime, the supernatural, and the unexplained converge. I'm your host, Matt.
I'm Jordan.
Let's dive right in. We journey back to 1897 to a small rural community where a young woman's restless spirit refused to be silenced. Imagine the rolling hills of Greenbrier County, West Virginia. The air is crisp, the sky a canvas of brilliant blue during the day and a blanket of stars by night. It's a place where the pace of life is gentle and the community is tightly knit. Yet beneath the serene exterior lies a story so eerie, so extraordinary, that it has been whispered about for generations. Today we uncover the haunting tale of Elva Zona Hester, a young woman whose untimely and mysterious death shook the very foundations of her community. But what sets this story apart from other tragic tales is the incredible turn of events that followed. Zona's story didn't end with her death. In an unprecedented twist, her spirit reached out from the grave, determined to reveal the truth and bring her killer to justice. This is a story that will make you question the very nature of our reality and the thin veil that separates the living from the dead. This is such a good story.
I'm already really interested. So I take it this ghost is already very interactive, or will be.
Will be. We'll get into that. I don't want to give too much away, but the ghost is very much active in a certain situation, I'll say that. Elva Zona Hester was a young woman living in Greenbrier County, known for her beauty and charm. Born in the heart of rural West Virginia, Elva Zona Hester, known to her friends and family as Zona, was the kind of person who lit up a room with her presence. Her auburn hair cascaded down her back in waves, and her green eyes sparkled with an infectious joy for life. She grew up in a loving household, the only daughter of Jacob and Mary Jane Hester. The Hesters were well respected in the community, known for their kindness and strong work ethic. Zona was beloved by all who knew her. She had a lively spirit and a generous heart, always willing to lend a helping hand to neighbors and friends. Her days were filled with the simple joys of country life, tending to the family garden, helping with household chores, and enjoying the company of close-knit family and friends. But in the autumn of 1896, Zona's life took an unexpected turn when a newcomer arrived in Greenbrier County. Edward Shue, a blacksmith by trade, was a man of striking appearance. Tall and broad-shouldered, with piercing blue eyes and an easy smile, he quickly became a topic of conversation among the locals. Handsome and charismatic, Edward seemed like the perfect match for the lovely Zona. Edward's arrival in Greenbrier was marked by a flurry of excitement and curiosity. He set up shop in the heart of town, and it wasn't long before the sound of his hammer striking the anvil became a familiar part of the daily rhythm. His skills as a blacksmith were impressive, and his charm made him a favorite among the town folk. But while most were taken by his outward charm, there were whispers, faint murmurs of a troubled past that Edward had left behind. Despite any lingering doubts, Zona was captivated by Edward. Their courtship was swift and intense. They spent evenings walking hand in hand through the fields, sharing laughter and dreams of a future together. Edward showered Zona with attention and affection, and before long, they were inseparable. In October 1896, just a few months after meeting, they were married in a small, joyous ceremony. To the outside world, Zona and Edward seemed like the perfect couple. But beneath the surface of the whirlwind romance, there were subtle signs that not everything was as it seemed. Friends and family noticed small but troubling changes in Zona. She seemed more reserved, her vibrant spirit dimmed slightly. There were whispers about Edward's temper, fleeting glimpses of a darker side that he kept well hidden. Mary Jane Hester, Zona's mother, couldn't shake a nagging feeling of unease about her new son-in-law. As the months passed, Zona's once joyous demeanor grew increasingly subdued. She confided little to her mother, but the worry in Mary Jane's heart only grew stronger. It was as if a shadow had fallen over the young bride, casting a dark cloud over her once bright and hopeful future.
Okay, so I've read a lot of romance novels, and the first thing I'm going to say is trust your gut. Something is off.
Oh, yeah.
I can feel it. It's always the charming ones. It is, every single time. It's always the really handsome, charming ones, and you're just like, red flag.
I will say that's part of the problem is this mentality that, especially back in the day, luckily it's not as prevalent today as it was back then. But anytime there's trouble in a marriage or someone's abusive, it was the idea that you couldn't talk to anybody. You couldn't say anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Honestly, if she would have said something to her, at least to her mother, her life may have been saved.
Probably. But I know back then it was such a different topic.
It was.
Such a different discussion to have. But back then, the culture was so different, you were expected to just take it.
Yeah. And divorce wasn't necessarily an option. I get it, but at the same time, abuse like this shouldn't be allowed to happen. Shouldn't be allowed to continue. And as long as nobody says anything, it's going to continue. Maybe not for Edward, but we'll find out more about that later. Just a few months into their marriage, tragedy struck. It was a cold January morning in 1897 when a young boy named Andy Jones was sent on an errand to the Shue household. His task was simple: deliver some freshly baked bread to Zona. He approached the modest white house, its windows frosted over from the chill of winter. Andy knocked on the door but received no answer. He knocked again, harder this time, but still there was only silence. Concerned, he turned the handle and let himself in. What he found inside would haunt him forever. Zona's body lay at the foot of the stairs, her lifeless eyes staring blankly at the ceiling. Her skin was pale, and she was dressed in a high-neck gown as if she had been carefully laid out for display. The scene was eerie and unsettling. Terrified, Andy ran to fetch Edward, who was at the blacksmith's shop. When Edward arrived, he displayed a strange mix of emotions. He rushed to Zona's side, cradling her head and sobbing uncontrollably. But his behavior struck some as overly dramatic, almost performative. The local doctor, Dr. George Knapp, was summoned. He arrived to find Edward already having moved Zona's body to their bed. Edward was distraught, holding Zona's head close to his chest, weeping loudly. The doctor attempted to examine the body, but Edward's grief was overwhelming. He wailed and begged the doctor to leave his beloved wife in peace. Under pressure from an overly emotional Edward, Dr. Knapp hastily concluded that Zona had died of everlasting faint, a vague term for heart failure, a term that provided little clarity and no justice. The funeral was held swiftly, with Edward displaying an odd insistence on dressing Zona himself and placing a scarf around her neck, claiming it was her favorite. Throughout the wake, he remained close to the casket, guarding it obsessively and preventing anyone from getting too close. As Zona was laid to rest in a local cemetery, whispers spread through the town. People couldn't shake the feeling that something was amiss. Why had Edward been so insistent on handling her body? Why had the doctor not conducted a thorough examination? But for now, the townspeople had no choice but to accept the official cause of death. The shadows of doubt lingered, waiting for the truth to emerge.
More red flags. All the red flags. There were so many red flags.
Oh, yeah, so many.
I'm going to take a wild guess that she was strangled.
Close.
Okay, I assumed it was something to do with her neck, which is why I went with strangulation, because there were probably strangulation marks.
You're very close, and we'll find out here shortly.
Okay, I was close. I'm going to take that. But obviously, he had something to do with it, because he's being super weirdly overdramatic. Gag.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I don't feel like he actually cared for her. I feel like he was weirdly controlling and needed someone to control. Don't care for that. I see it all the time in my books. Ew. Gross. No thank you. Don't like that.
I will say, separately, all these things don't necessarily point to guilt. And honestly, even together, they don't necessarily prove guilt. But I do think that it gives pause, especially not to let the doctor examine the body. That to me is a big red flag, like probably the biggest out of everything.
Because I would think if your brand new wife just died out of nowhere, you'd be like, what happened? Give me answers.
And I don't like the whole everlasting faint thing. Apparently it was a common kind of
catch-all term.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Essentially, they would use it when they didn't know for sure what happened, or in this case, when they couldn't even examine the body.
I agree, but I think he was just trying to do the best that he could at the time, and he was just trying to be, I don't want to say nice, but he probably was just trying to be respectful, and I get it. He probably was just like, oh God, this guy's completely lost his mind over his new wife's death. I don't know what to do with this. I looked over her, kinda. We're gonna call it this.
Yeah. I get why he didn't want to push it too much, trying to be respectful to the husband. But at the same time, a 20-something girl doesn't just randomly die. I will say probably 90% of the time that someone that young dies, it is not natural causes.
No. Don't get me wrong. There are a couple random things that could happen.
Yeah, like cancer or some other genetic disease.
Exactly. But there would probably have been some sort of lead up to it.
Yeah, but if the 20-year-old abruptly dies for no reason, then probably going to be murder somehow.
I have to agree. And as we all know, if it's murder, it's probably going to be someone close to her, usually.
Anyways, that's our story. So see you next week.
Stay tuned.
Just kidding. There's more to the story. Zona's story didn't end with her death. Her mother, Mary Jane, couldn't shake the feeling that something was terribly wrong. Mary Jane was a woman of strong will and deep intuition. In the weeks following her daughter's burial, a sense of unease plagued her. She couldn't accept the official cause of Zona's death. Something in her heart told her that there was more to the story, something dark and sinister. It was late one night, as Mary Jane lay in bed, her thoughts consumed by her daughter's tragic fate, that something strange occurred. Mary Jane stirred in her sleep, sensing a presence in the room. She opened her eyes to see a soft, ethereal glow by her bedside. There, standing in a shimmering, translucent form, was Zona. Her eyes were filled with a sorrow that transcended the veil between life and death.
Mother, I have come to tell you the truth. I did not die of natural causes. Edward, he took my life.
Mary Jane's heart pounded in her chest, a mixture of fear and a desperate need to understand. Mary Jane pleaded with her daughter to tell her what happened.
It was a cold winter morning. Edward and I had argued. He was enraged, more violent than ever before. In his fury, he grabbed me by the neck and he broke it. Mother, he broke my neck.
The ghostly vision faded, leaving Mary Jane in a state of shock and disbelief. She struggled to comprehend the horror of what she had just witnessed. But as the nights passed, Zona's spirit returned, each visit more vivid and more detailed than the last.
He was cruel, Mother. He hid his true nature from everyone. But now, you must make them see. You must make them hear the truth.
Each night, Zona's spirit revealed more about the violent struggle that led to her death, and Mary Jane's resolve grew stronger. By the fourth night, she was convinced beyond any doubt that her daughter's spirit had returned to seek justice. She promised her daughter that she wouldn't rest till Edward was brought to justice. Armed with a spectral testimony, Mary Jane went to the local prosecutor, John Alfred Preston. She recounted the ghostly visits and unwavering conviction, describing in detail how Zona's spirit had revealed the true cause of her death. Initially skeptical, Preston couldn't ignore the passion and certainty in Mary Jane's account. He agreed to reopen the investigation, and so the stage was set for a series of events that would bring the truth to light. Zona's spirit had spoken from beyond the grave, guiding her mother to seek justice and exposing the dark secrets that Edward had tried to bury.
Okay, so I was really close.
You were close.
I was really close. So I knew it had something to do with her neck.
Yeah. And just so everyone knows, I make these like speaking parts for Jordan. She gets so excited when she gets to speak.
I get really excited.
So for four nights, this ghost had appeared to her mother and told her that Edward had murdered her, broke her neck, you know, all that.
As mildly creepy as that would be, it would be so vindicating to be like, I freaking knew something was going on.
Which at the end of the episode, I'll kind of give my thoughts on it. But that might not be a good thing either.
That's fair.
But now the prosecutor decided to open back up the investigation. Now we're going to get into that and see exactly what they find.
Yeah, I have a feeling Edward's not going to be too happy about that.
Because remember, at this point, all there is her feeling and then this spectral evidence.
Which isn't a whole lot to go off of.
No. So let's see what they find now. Skeptical but intrigued, the authorities agreed to exhume Zona's body for a proper autopsy. In the crisp morning air, a somber group gathered at the cemetery. The decision to exhume Zona's body was not taken lightly, but the weight of Mary Jane's spectral testimony could not be ignored. The townspeople watched in hushed anticipation as the gravediggers carefully unearthed Zona's casket. Dr. George Knapp, the same physician who had initially declared Zona's death as everlasting faint, stood by with a sense of foreboding. This time, the examination would be thorough, with every detail meticulously recorded. The casket was opened, revealing Zona's preserved body. Despite the passage of time, her face still held a semblance of peace, but the high-collar dress and scarf around her neck seemed now like an ominous shroud. Dr. Knapp and two other physicians, Dr. A.H. Soule and Dr. R.M. Hatfield, began their examination. Carefully, they removed the scarf and examined Zona's neck. The findings were shocking and undeniable. Her neck was broken, the vertebrae displaced, and there were clear finger marks, evidence of a violent struggle. Dr. Knapp was convinced that her neck was deliberately broken. It was no accident nor a natural death. The autopsy confirmed Mary Jane's ghostly account. Zona's neck had indeed been broken, and there were clear signs of foul play. The physicians documented their findings meticulously, and the autopsy report left no room for doubt. As news of the autopsy spread through Greenbrier County, the reaction was swift and intense. The community was gripped by a mixture of horror, anger, and a deep sense of betrayal. Edward, once seen as a charming and grieving widower, now stood at the center of a growing storm of suspicion. Townspeople recalled Edward's peculiar behavior following Zona's death, his insistence on dressing her body, the strange positioning of the scarf, and his obsessive guarding of the casket. These details, once dismissed as the actions of a grief-stricken husband, now seemed sinister. Edward was arrested and charged with the murder of his wife, Zona. As he was taken into custody, the townspeople watched with a mixture of relief and grim satisfaction. Justice, it seemed, was finally within reach. With Edward in jail and the truth of Zona's death coming to light, the community's focus shifted to the upcoming trial. It would be a trial like no other, where the testimony of a ghost as relayed by Mary Jane would play a crucial role in the pursuit of justice. Zona's restless spirit had revealed the dark secrets that Edward had tried to bury.
I don't recall ever in another trial there being a ghost being on trial.
From what I read, this is one of the very first trials that actually not only used spectral evidence, but got a conviction, at least in the American modern justice system.
Right. Not like Salem witch trials or something, which were a complete catastrophe.
Obviously, the Salem witch trials were basically all spectral evidence.
Which weren't even real evidence.
Being a skeptic, whenever someone says spectral evidence, I'm automatically on the defense. But regardless of the spectral evidence, you've actually got physical evidence here.
You do. You have actual physical evidence.
Now we'll get into the actual trial. With undeniable evidence of murder, Edward was arrested and put on trial. The case drew widespread attention, not just for the crime, but for the supernatural testimony that had brought it to light. The trial of Edward Shue began on June 22, 1897, in Greenbrier County Courthouse. The room was packed with townfolk and curious onlookers, their faces etched with anticipation and a hunger for justice. It was a trial unlike any other, steeped in both legal gravity and spectral mystery. Judge J.W. McWhorter presided over the case, maintaining a stern demeanor as the prosecution, led by prosecutor John Alfred Preston, presented its evidence. The first few days of the trial were dominated by expert testimonies from the physicians who had conducted the autopsy. Dr. George Knapp testified that he found clear evidence of a broken neck, with the vertebrae dislocated and bruising consistent with manual strangulation. He determined the findings were conclusive. Zona was murdered. The prosecutor's case seemed airtight, supported by compelling physical evidence, but it was Mary Jane's testimony that captured the imagination and emotions of everyone in the courtroom. Mary Jane, dressed in mourning black, took the stand. Her voice was steady, her gaze unwavering, as she recounted the ghostly visits from her daughter, telling the court that her daughter appeared to her over four nights. She revealed to her the true cause of her death. She spoke of a violent struggle with Edward, who broke Zona's neck in a fit of rage. She showed Mary Jane the exact manner in which her life was taken. Her words sent a ripple of astonishment through the courtroom. The idea that a ghost testimonies could be considered in a court of law was unprecedented. But Mary Jane's conviction was unshakable, and her detailed account matched the physical evidence discovered in the autopsy. On the other side, Edward's defense attorney, Dr. William Rucker, faced an uphill battle. He attempted to discredit Mary Jane's testimony, painting her as a grief-stricken mother driven to delusions by sorrow. Despite the defense's efforts to dismiss the supernatural elements of the case, the jury was moved by Mary Jane's testimony and the incontrovertible medical evidence. Edward's behavior following Zona's death, his insistence on dressing her body, the high-collar dress, the scarf, all pointed to a man desperately trying to hide his guilt. After days of emotional testimony and intense legal arguments, the jury retired to deliberate. It didn't take long for them to reach a verdict. That verdict is...
I'm going to take a wild guess that they said he was guilty.
Well, we'll get into it next.
So rude.
But here's the thing. I'm pretty skeptical when it comes to spectral evidence. We talked about it when we did the Salem witch trial case. I don't think spectral evidence really should play a part in any kind of trial. However,
they also had physical to go with it.
In this case, the spectral evidence matches exactly what the physical evidence told them.
Exactly.
Now, I will say it's kind of a gray area. The fact that the spectral evidence was used as evidence to exhume the body and do an autopsy. And that's one thing that could have been argued.
But at the same time, you also could have looked at Edward's behavior. You could have looked at how odd it was that he wouldn't let the doctors see the body. You could have looked at how weird it was that he insisted on dressing her. Things like that. You could have just looked at his behaviors alone, but nobody was looking at him that closely.
Yeah, and I think that's what he was getting at. He was trying to dismiss the spectral evidence, not necessarily because it was compelling testimony or anything, but it was the basis of them opening the investigation. So my guess is he was trying to dismiss that so then he could say, well, without that, they didn't have an actual cause for an investigation, which is my guess is why he was trying to focus so highly on the spectral evidence. I guess even with the physical evidence of the broken neck, you could argue that somebody else broke into the house. Obviously, this was back in a time when they didn't lock the doors.
The whole thing's just, I don't know, it's hard to think about.
But I bet you can't guess what's going to happen now.
Oh no, do they? Oh no. Does it not go the way I think it's going?
There's a twist.
Okay.
And we'll get into that now.
Great.
Despite the defense's efforts, the evidence was overwhelming. The jury's deliberation was swift. The weight of the evidence, both physical and supernatural, left little room for doubt. The courtroom held its breath as the jury returned, their faces solemn and resolute. The four men stood to deliver the verdict. We, the jury, find the defendant, Edward Shue, not guilty.
Are you kidding me?
Just kidding. We, the jury, find the defendant, Edward Shue, guilty of murder in the first degree.
Asshole.
Edward stood motionless, his face pale and devoid of emotion. The reality of his fate settled over him like a suffocating blanket. The courtroom erupted in a mix of relief, satisfaction, and even sorrow. For Mary Jane, the verdict was a bittersweet victory. She had fought tirelessly for justice, guided by the spirit of her beloved daughter. Edward was led away, the weight of his crimes hanging heavy in the air. As he was escorted out, the townsfolk watched, their eyes reflecting a mix of contempt and closure. The man who had brought such darkness into their community was finally facing the consequences of his actions.
I hate you.
That was just too great.
I hate you. I voice characters at random for you, and you're mean to me.
I wish I would have recorded your reaction just because the whole look of disbelief was great.
I thought for real they didn't. I was going to be like, but why?
Nope. He was found guilty. I'm not upset about that because I definitely think he was guilty. My only issue with it is obviously the spectral evidence part of it. As we know, I very much believe in ghosts because I've seen a ghost. However, I don't think ghosts should be part of a trial. Mostly because until we can summons a ghost and have him actually testify in court, you're just taking the word of someone else.
I can agree with that.
The basis of the question, did Mary Jane actually see her daughter over those 4 days? Or was it just her grief-strickenness conjured this delusion that she was actually talking to her daughter?
I feel like she did because her description was too accurate for it not to be.
It's one of those things that it can go either way. I definitely don't think spectral evidence should normally be part of a trial, but her evidence was pretty spot on. Although I think you could argue that she could have got lucky. It can go either way.
I feel like she did, but you know me. I'm always the person who believes and you're always the person who doesn't. That's the roles that we play.
Yeah, every once in a while we agree. Sometimes.
Never.
The trial of the Greenbrier ghost remains unique in American legal history, where the testimony of a ghost played a crucial role in securing a conviction. It is a story that transcends the boundaries of life and death, a tale of love, betrayal, and the quest for justice that would not be silenced. Zona's spirit found peace, knowing that her mother had honored her memory and fought for the truth. The community of Greenbrier County was forever changed by the events that had unfolded. A stark reminder of the thin veil that separates our world from the unknown. Do you think that this was truly the spirit of Zona who came back to get justice, or a fabrication by a grief-stricken mother? Leave a comment below and don't forget to like and subscribe. Thank you for joining us on this journey through all things mysterious. If you've enjoyed uncovering these mysteries with us, please show your support by liking, subscribing, and following us on your favorite listening platform. For more content and ways to stay connected, don't forget to check out our links in the description below.
As always, we keep you guessing.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.